What happens when the government, forces the world's most secretive tech company to just hand over the keys to its castle? Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah, it's a massive shift in how these companies operate.
Right. Have you ever looked at the phone in your hand or like the game console under your television and realize it isn't just a piece of consumer electronics, it's this highly engineered digital ecosystem designed to do one thing, get you to move in, get comfortable, and ensure you never, ever want to leave.
Exactly. It's about total retention.
Totally. Well, today we are looking at a massive stack of intelligence from the August 10th, 2026 edition of the Tech and Knight newsletter. And what we're seeing across the board is just an unprecedented war for your loyalty.
The rules of engagement are completely changing right now.
They really are. We've got the EU dropping a hammer on Apple, a massive iPhone 17 supply chain leak, Google's really aggressive Pixel 11 strategy, Nintendo's earthquake recovery for the Switch 2, Minecraft's next-gen leap, and Xbox's shifting business model. Okay, let's unpack this.
What's fascinating here is that every single one of these stories is fundamentally about ecosystems, how companies build them, protect them, and sometimes are forced to break them open. While they seem like isolated updates, they are all chapters of the exact same book.
And breaking them open is exactly where we need to begin, because the situation between Apple and the European Union is, it's escalating dramatically right now.
Yeah, the EU is not backing down.
No, not at all. According to the Digest, the EU has essentially handed Apple a 6-month ultimatum. They're ordering Apple to open up its notoriously locked down iOS ecosystem to third-party developers, or they face these just catastrophic fines.
And this isn't just about tweaking an app store policy anymore.
Right, they want the crown jewels.
Yeah.
The EU is demanding access to AirDrop, AirPlay, the notification management system, background app refresh, and even continuity camera, which is, that incredibly slick feature that lets you use your iPhone as a webcam for your Mac.
Right. So this is the hammer dropping from the Digital Markets Act, the DMA, which took effect back in 2024. The overarching mechanism of the DMA is to target what the EU classifies as gatekeepers.
Right, the unavoidable bottlenecks.
Exactly. They've identified these massive entities, Apple, Google, Meta, Amazon, Microsoft, ByteDance, and determined their market control is just so absolute. From the EU's perspective, Apple is leveraging its dominant position to unfairly lock consumers in.
Which stifles the smaller developers. I want to try and visualize this for a second because it feels like Apple spent the last decade building a proprietary high-speed rail network,
That's a
right?
good way to look at it.
Everything on it runs perfectly because they designed the tracks, they built the stations, and they exclusively manufacture the sleek bullet trains that run on it. Now the DMA is stepping in and saying, you legally have to let standard freight trains and competitor rail cars use your tracks.
Which creates massive, massive friction.
Huge friction. Because it's like paying for a VIP club membership, and suddenly the bouncer is told to let anyone from the street use the VIP lounge. Apple's arguing that forcing their tracks to accommodate wheels they weren't designed for is going to derail the whole user experience. They're saying it compromises security, privacy, and that tight hardware-software integration.
That is a highly accurate way to frame the tension. It's a fundamental clash of philosophies. Regulators are trying to architect a landscape of open competition, arguing no single corporation should own the playing field.
While Apple is architecting for curation and frictionless usability, but honestly, Apple always finds a loophole. I have to push back a little here.
Go ahead.
Are they really going to let a Samsung speaker use AirPlay without a fight? I can't imagine them handing over the code that lets an Android user beam a photo to an iPhone without intentionally making it super clunky.
Well, yes and no. You're absolutely right to point out Apple's historical resistance. They will likely implement this in the most restrictive way legally permissible.
Right, malicious compliance.
Exactly. But the EU's compliance mandates are becoming increasingly strict about parity. If enforced as written, the technical barriers fall. If you're listening to this, it means Android phones could get AirDrop-like parity with iPhones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and third-party TV or speaker makers could skip Apple's complex licensing agreements. It increases competition and theoretically lowers prices by stripping away that Apple tax.
So if regulators are actively tearing down the software walls that keep people locked inside the ecosystem, how do these companies keep you from leaving?
Well, you build a hardware moat. If you can't lock a user in with software like AirDrop, you have to lock them in with undeniable hardware.
Which perfectly explains the staggering supply chain movements we're seeing with the iPhone 17 and the Pixel 11. The Digest cites a DigiTimes report saying Apple shattered its own component order records for the iPhone 17.
They're marshaling a massive global network.
Over 200 suppliers. We're talking TSMC, Samsung, LG, Sony, Qualcomm, Foxconn. And they're locking in these orders 6 to 9 months early. They're moving to a 2-nanometer architecture for their A19 processor. Periscope cameras on all models, 25% more battery, ProMotion 120Hz standard, and more RAM for AI.
That 2-nanometer architecture is the big deal here.
Why is that specific number causing such a frenzy, though?
Because it represents a massive leap in physical engineering. A nanometer is a billionth of a meter. So a 2-nanometer architecture means shrinking microscopic transistors so small and packing them so closely that electrons travel shorter distances.
So less travel distance means things happen faster.
Yes, but more importantly, it means significantly less energy is lost as heat. In a phone, heat is the ultimate enemy of battery life.
Ah, so they can run complex on-device AI without the phone catching fire.
Precisely. That's their strategy. Overwhelming hardware superiority guaranteed by locking down global manufacturing.
But that superiority is bumping the starting price up a full $100 to $899. And here's where it gets really interesting. Google is watching this massive Apple machine gear up, and they're playing a very predatory game.
The October 13th Pixel 11 event.
Exactly. They wait for the September iPhone hype to settle, watch people wince at that $899 price, and then swoop in. The post-hype cleanup game.
And it works. The data shows this strategy made the Pixel 10 actually outsell the 9. Google can't beat Apple's 200 supplier muscle, so they win on price and disruption.
Right. They're offering the Tensor G5, a 50MP new sensor, a 6.3-inch screen, a 5,000 mAh battery with 45W charging, and 7 years of updates, all starting at $799.
It's a direct undercut.
But the phone didn't even grab me as much as the Pixel Watch 4. The leaks say it's $399 and has advanced blood pressure, sleep apnea detection, and this is the crazy one non-invasive glucose monitoring. Wait, really? How does a watch read blood sugar without a needle?
This is the absolute bleeding edge of wearable health tech. Instead of a physical needle, it uses high-density optical sensors.
Like shining a light through the skin.
Exactly. It shines highly specific wavelengths of light into the interstitial fluid beneath your skin. By measuring how that light scatters and reflects back, algorithms calculate the glucose concentration in real time.
That is literal science fiction. And it shows the different philosophies, right? Apple flexes supply chain light to guarantee stock, and Google tries to win on price and sci-fi health features.
Exactly. It's all about how they bait the trap to keep you in their ecosystem.
Right. But relying on a 200 supplier ecosystem introduces a terrifying physical vulnerability, which transitions us perfectly to another company relying on supply chain mastery right now, Nintendo.
The January earthquake in Japan.
Yeah, a severe earthquake in the Noto region damaged 4 of Nintendo's critical factories. You'd think that would cause massive delays.
Typically, a disruption of that magnitude absolutely derails hardware launches.
But Nintendo CEO Shigeru Miyamoto confirmed they deployed engineering teams immediately and used alternative suppliers. Repairs finished in September, and the Switch 2 launch remains exactly on track for March 2027.
Which is exactly 6 years after the original Switch launched.
Right. Following up a console that sold over 145 million units, the specs say it's going to be $399 to $449 with an 8-inch screen and a custom NVIDIA chip with DLSS.
That NVIDIA partnership is the secret weapon here.
Because DLSS is that AI upscaling trick, right? Where it renders at a lower resolution to save battery and uses AI to magically guess what the 4K image should look like.
That's a great summary. It lets a portable punch way above its weight class.
But I have to express sheer disbelief on this next part. To keep players on the new hardware, Mojang is offering a free Switch 2 upgrade for Minecraft.
With over 300 million copies sold, it's a huge deal.
But the specs for the upgrade, they're promising full ray tracing, running at a stable 60 frames per second docked or 30 to 45 portable. Wait, full ray tracing on a portable console?
It sounds impossible, I know.
I mean, ray tracing is calculating millions of realistic light reflections on water in real time. Can a handheld device really handle realistic light reflections without melting in your hands?
If you forced a traditional mobile processor to do that math, it absolutely would overheat and throttle. But this is where the custom NVIDIA chip comes in.
Oh, because of the hardware ray tracing.
Exactly. NVIDIA included dedicated physical cores on the silicon whose only job is to calculate those light beams. The main processor delegates the heavy lifting, so you get hyper-realistic shadows without incinerating the battery.
That is brilliant engineering. But the business side of it, Mojang is giving this massive graphical overhaul away for free to existing owners. Why not charge for a new game?
Because retaining users in the ecosystem is infinitely more profitable than a one-time entry fee.
Ah, because of the recurring spending.
Right. A retained Minecraft player buys character skins, user-generated maps on the marketplace, and pays monthly for private realm servers. Nintendo is likely absorbing those massive Earthquake supply chain costs to keep the price under $450, and Mojang is giving away next-gen graphics just to keep you from leaving.
It's the difference between selling someone a gourmet burger once versus getting them to subscribe to your all-you-can-eat buffet for the rest of their lives.
That is a perfect analogy, and no one understands that shift to recurring revenue better than Mojang's parent company, Xbox.
Yeah, that final piece of intel from the Digest is wild. Following the Activision Blizzard acquisition, Xbox is reshaping its entire empire. Blizzard is now the top revenue-generating studio for Xbox at $2.8 billion annually, excluding Mojang.
It's staggering when you look at the legacy studios.
Right, because traditional single-purchase titans are getting dwarfed. 343 Industries with Halo makes $890 million. Turn 10 with Forza makes $670 million. The Coalition with Gears of War makes $420 million. Blizzard beats them all combined.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the ultimate lock-in. The industry is shifting away from cinematic single-player games to live service models.
Which is super controversial. Blizzard president Mike Ybarra says they'll keep making games for all platforms, but titles like Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4 are now massive Game Pass drivers.
The pros are obvious for the company's stable, predictable revenue. Subscriptions, battle passes, microtransactions. It adds immense value to Game Pass.
But the cons are the cultural clashes within Xbox Studios, right? There are real fears that if a single-player epic doesn't generate endless microtransactions, it just gets defunded. So what does this all mean for the gamer who just wants a good story?
It means they are caught in the middle of a massive pivot. The hardware under your TV matters less than getting you into that monthly billing cycle.
Man, that is bleak. But I guess it really ties everything together.
It really does. Whether it's the EU tearing down Apple software walls, Google and Apple fighting over your wrist and pocket with bleeding-edge hardware, Nintendo overcoming natural disasters to get an affordable screen in your hands, or Xbox pivoting heavily to live services.
The tech industry is laser-focused on one thing, getting you into their world and never letting you leave.
But ultimately, you, the listener, are the winner here.
Because the fierce competition is driving unbelievable innovation. I mean, we're getting sci-fi health sensors on watches and ray-traced portable gaming, all at highly competitive prices because they're terrified of losing us.
Exactly. The companies are absorbing huge costs just to win your loyalty.
We've talked a lot today about companies fighting to keep you in their ecosystems, whether through hardware lock-ins or live service subscriptions. But it raises a deeper question for you to think about. If all our gadgets become open utilities governed by regulators and all our games become ongoing subscription services, 10 years from now, will we actually own any of our technology or will we just be renting our digital lives?
That is the big question.
Something to think about next time you hit subscribe. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.